Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Glad to have you with us. I'm very pleased to be joined this morning by Patrick Ryan, Chris Anderson, and Dan Williams. Gentlemen, hello.
Morning, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, great to have you with us today again. We've got another excellent lineup. We have several guests on hold that we're excited to bring in. Our conversation today is dedicated to Medicaid. But before we begin this morning, anything from your perspective?
This is Patrick. Nothing new on my end. However, I am really looking forward to hearing an update on how meetings went recently with the state and seeing hopefully there'll be some good news there regarding our MA reimbursement.
That would be good to hear. I don't know that anyone's holding their breath, but hey, you never know.
Yeah, this is Dan. Same thing. Nothing new, but I'm anxiously waiting to hear what I hope is good news, but pessimistically believe it won't be.
Okay. Well, let's get into it right away, and we have a loaded show here. I should rephrase that. We don't have a loaded show. We will have an in-depth conversation on Medicaid. Today's discussion is dedicated to Wisconsin Medicaid, and as many of you know listening to this broadcast, the state of Wisconsin pays Medicaid beneficiary bills when they request an ambulance transportation. And unfortunately, Wisconsin rates are significantly less than states that adjoin us and across the nation. And so that's been recent conversations with officials at the state of Wisconsin. How can these rates change so that ambulance services don't have the challenge in operating below their typical delivery costs and taking that out of their operation? Now, there's other states throughout the United States that are actively pursuing changes in Medicaid billing, and we'll talk further about those states specifically and what they're doing. Those states are Vermont and Oregon. California has done some recent things, too, that we'll highlight here in a little bit. You're listening to Wisconsin EMS Live, and what we're going to be doing is bringing into our conversation Jerry Biggert. Jerry is the chairman with the EMS Advisory Board. Dana Seckler will join us. He is the EMS chief with Baraboo District Area Ambulance. Larry Knuth is the vice president with Paratech Ambulance. And at the conclusion of our broadcast, Jerry is also going to offer some highlights as to what is happening with the EMS Advisory Board, some of the things that they are working on. Today's program will run approximately 30 to 40 minutes. It's sponsored today by Boundary Medical, Godfrey & Kahn Law Firm, Transworld Systems, and American Ambulance Association. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin. Our program continues after this brief message. Boundary Medical helps America's EMS and fire departments save lives by providing a full array of medical equipment and supplies. You can, of course, get national brands from Boundary, but did you know that Boundary's private label products can save you up to 20% off the price of name brand? Another way to save is when you need to update your AEDs, defibrillators, monitors, and pumps. Boundary's recertified equipment offering provides you solutions at a fraction of the new price. You can also save with Boundary's smart kitting solutions. Order custom pre-assembled kits at a cost-effective price and ensure you have the products you need on scene. With a full line of pharmaceuticals, supplies, and equipment, Boundary can help you save lives and meet your budget. Visit www.boundary.com today to see how Boundary can lend a hand. Having trouble collecting on past due accounts or your aging report continues to increase? Contact Transworld Systems and ask about their easy flat fee collection service that averages just $10 per past due account. With better than average industry collection results, Transworld presents an option versus writing off that $500 or $2,000 patient bill. For more information, go to PAW's homepage and click on Transworld's banner ad. Collections just got easier with Transworld Systems.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Covelli, joined by Patrick Ryan, Chris Anderson, and Dan Williams. I'm also pleased to bring into our conversation our three guests today, Jerry Biggert, Dana Seckler, and Larry Knuth. Welcome.
Good morning.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
It's great. Very good. It's great to have you all with us, and this is obviously a very timely and important conversation regards Medicaid and the transportation reimbursement rates to ambulance services. This conversation has been had many, many times before, and I know there's been a lot of concern out there over the years. The last time we saw an increase from Wisconsin Medicaid was back in 2008, and fortunately that was only a minor 1% increase, but since then it hasn't changed much. Dana, would you mind starting us off with an update on where things are at with Wisconsin Medicaid and some of the recent conversations you've had with officials at Department of Health in Madison?
Yeah, I'll be glad to. I do want to point out some of the reasons that we even got started in this was originally looking at some projects associated with Medicare. And if you remember, the federal government did a couple studies in which they had two different studies that readily admitted that the reimbursement rates for Medicare didn't cover the costs of the transport. And that's where we get those additional bonus payments for urban, rural, and then super rural. So that was where this started. And then all of a sudden I kind of sat down one day and I was looking at my rate charts and I was comparing Medicaid to Medicare. And I realized as bad as Medicare is, Medicaid is worse. So just to give you an example, if you look at a BLS non-emergent rate, Medicare pays us back $216.44. And Medicaid only pays $94.90, so less than half of what even Medicare pays, and the government has admitted that that doesn't cover the cost. So that kind of started the whole project. We've been discussing it at the State EMS Advisory Board. There's many subcommittees, and those subcommittees have subcommittees, and one of those was Larry and I were asked to participate in that and start working on what the rates are and then what do we do to move forward. So we did complete a comparison chart of the various states surrounding us, including Minnesota, Illinois, Nebraska, and Missouri. And except for a few minor exceptions, basically Wisconsin has the least reimbursement rate for Medicaid as compared to any of the other states. The only one that even kind of comes close to us is Illinois, but half of their reimbursement rates are still better than what we get in Wisconsin, and certainly everybody else has a better reimbursement rate altogether. So putting this all together, we developed several questions that we wanted to have the state DHS reply to, just kind of use as a starting point. We had that meeting last week, and they were able to answer the majority of them. Some of them, just because the data has never been collected, they didn't necessarily have the information, but they did attempt to answer the majority of our questions regarding Medicaid and the disbursement of it for ambulance services. So I can get into greater detail, or if you have specific questions you'd like to concentrate on right now.
Sure. Maybe if we could bring Larry into the conversation, Larry Knuth. I know, Larry, you were a part of that conversation. You're also vice president at Paratech Ambulance Service. You've been in the system for operating within the ambulance system for many years. Can you maybe give us a little history on the Medicaid situation, the rate, where you seen things, where you hope things go, maybe a snapshot from a large ambulance provider perspective?
Well, thanks, Joe. Yes, the certainly Medicaid program has always been a part of ambulance operations revenue source, and as populations increase or as Medicaid changes into some more managed care HMOs, and as we all know, recently moving into a broker system for the non-emergency portion of the Medicaid coverage, it brings a challenge to all services to maintain a good revenue source to ensure that there's adequate service. With regards to the last change increase, I think it may be better to say change, because 1% really is so minute of an increase that the change was not felt very much by providers. What was felt approximately 8-9 years ago, that Wisconsin took away what was called the crossover. If someone was a dual entitlee, Medicare or Medicaid, as you know, Medicare pays a profile on 80% of that profile rate, and then there is a 20% balance. And if individuals have coverage for that 20%, it gets paid that way or private pay. But at the time, if it was a crossover dual entitlee, Medicaid paid that 20%. The state of Wisconsin ceased that several years ago, and that was impactful. Their rationale was that since Medicare was paying as primary, that the rate that Medicare pays was over and above what the Medicaid profile was. So I think focusing on the Medicaid fee schedule, had we done that prior to that, as an example, maybe the state wouldn't have had an argument if the Medicaid rate was higher than it certainly is and has been for a great amount of time. Dana alluded to that we did meet with DHS last week. We had some specific questions. Really, the goal of our Professional Ambulance Association, as well as the state EMS board, in particular the EMS Systems Management and Development Committee, is to understand where the money comes from, how the money is the pie, if you will, is allotted, how much is allotted to for ambulance services, and that was really the essence of our meeting last week. And I'll send it back to Dana to get some particulars if you are interested.
Dana, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. One of the questions that we wanted to know was, just as a starting point, was how much money is actually out there, you know, whether it budgeted and what, you know, we didn't care if it was state dollars, federal dollars, or a combination of the both. But, you know, ultimately, what's the big pot of money that we even have to draw from? And probably the reason behind that is, you know, if you only talk at a couple $100,000 anyways, and you're trying to split that up amongst all the ambulance services and physicians and hospitals, obviously that's not going to go far. But the larger that number is, the potential for being able to access more revenue. So we asked the same question at a different meeting a couple years ago, and how much money is dedicated towards reimbursement of Medicaid expenses? And the answer several years ago was $7 billion with a B, dollars. $7 billion. I know when you're trying to give it to all the various hospitals and physicians groups and ambulance services, that probably doesn't go far, but it just is such a huge number, I can't even comprehend that. We asked that same question then this year, which is about 2 years later, and that number actually increased to $9.1 billion, again with a B, dollars. So, you know, we respectfully pointed out that even though the whole entire state Medicaid budget has increased by $2 billion over the past couple of years, the payments for Medicaid have either stayed the same or they've actually decreased in the areas where the managed care, the non-emergency medical transportation groups have come in and don't even use ambulance services, but rather look to use wheelchair vans and taxi cabs in their place. So reimbursements for Medicaid have dropped either by non-use at all, or if you do get paid, it's the same as what we said was basically back in 2008. We did ask about a chart that shows a comparison of that $9 billion, where does it all go, what goes towards physicians, what goes towards hospitals, and what goes towards ambulance services. And at the time, they don't really have a chart or any way to break that down to determine that number on how much actually goes to ambulance services. But I will suggest that at the federal level, they did the same question was asked of Medicare dollars, and of all the Medicare dollars that are out there, less than 1% are used to reimburse ambulance services for transports. So my assumption is it's pretty close to that same number, that, and even if we doubled that number to 2%, it's really very little amount of funding that's used to reimburse ambulance services.
Very good. Thank you for pointing those things out. And I think the important thing is that there's conversation taking place, and hopefully there will be some options or ongoing conversations here in the immediate future. Jerry Biggert, let's bring you into the conversation. Oh, very good, Dana. I'm glad that came up because that's very important. Jerry, let's bring you into the conversation, too, here as the EMS Advisory Board Chair. This has obviously been an initiative of your committee. Where do you see things going from an overall perspective? Or where would you like to see things go?
Well, we knew we put the right man on the job with Dana. He has a passion to dig into this, and using other committee members like Larry, you know, it's been great to get the meetings. I guess, you know, this is obviously going to have to be an initiative way larger than the EMS board. This is going to require the different groups like PAW, and, you know, the firefighters and, you know, all the groups that have lobbyists and have access to start reaching out to legislators and have their members start educating their local and state officials to, you know, get this on the radar, just like we're trying to do with, you know, mobile integrated health care. We think that there's a huge opportunity here for us to impact the amount of money that seems to be spiraling out of control. It's got to be one of the largest parts of the state budget, if not the largest, at that many billions of dollars. And I just feel like, you know, we've come with some good answers with our mobile integrated health care and how we can impact people. And, you know, I guess I just am wondering, you know, what kind of traction that's getting. When we look at private industry, we see them constantly doing preventative measures with their people and seeing a $5 or $6 return on investment for every dollar they put into it. Have people running around with Fitbits all the time, you know, because their employer makes them for their health insurance. And we just see all these, everybody's investing in prevention. Dentists have done it, fire departments have done it, and the outcomes are great. I mean, what if, I can't even imagine the outcomes we could have by going after the sickest, most indigent, most people that need the most services, people that call 911 because they're lonely, and start impacting them in a positive way and seeing what kind of outcomes we can have on those billions of dollars that we're spending in the state. It just seems like we're missing the prevention piece, the outreach that we're trying to do. And I think it's time for a lot of our stakeholders to really start reaching out to their legislators and educating them on this option.
I would imagine Wisconsin is no different than any of the other states the last few years, as they've seen their Medicaid rolls significantly increase, a number of people entering into the system for care and coverage under that. As Dana pointed out, the budget significantly increased by $2 billion. It's not pocket change by any means. Dan and Chris and Patrick, anything for our guests or anything in general as far as Medicaid?
This is Patrick. Just one more of a general question. Did you guys meet with DHS or Medicaid? Or I just was curious to know who exactly you guys were able to get in to see.
Yeah, it was DHS. And under DHS, we had the director of Medicaid, Kevin Moore. We also had Kevin McGowan. If I mispronounced her name, I apologize. She's the administrator for public health there at DHS, and then also James Newland, the EMS chief for the EMS office, was also in attendance.
That sounds like a great group, Dana. I mean, Kevin Moore in particular, just the fact you were able to get a meeting is impressive.
Oh, yeah. And it was over an hour long, and they gave us their full attention, and attempted. We had a lot of questions besides just what we had written down that we went through and just reviewed and talked about. And I did want to point out that at the end of it, the walk away is that we left the door open as well as they did, that if we need to come back and meet in our subcommittee groups again and kind of determine a plan and a proposed rate of where we'd like to see the Medicaid reimbursement be. And, Kevin opened the door to say, if you could get me back a plan with some specific numbers, we will certainly review them and see what we can or can't do, to look at those numbers. No promises, but certainly an invitation that the door is open.
Hey, Dana, this is Dan.
Yeah.
What does it take to actually make a change? Is that a legislative change, or can the administration of Medicaid make the changes if they have enough of a lobby to show a case that it's there's a hardship or whatever, however they base that? Is that something that can be made internally, or does that have to be a recommendation to the legislature?
Well, my interpretation is a twofold answer, and Larry, jump in where you want to offer additional. My interpretation is let's say we come back and we want to increase everything by $1, okay? We bring the plan forward. We say, here's what our proposal is. Here's this and that. He would take those numbers and say, well, according to last year's numbers, here's what we can reimburse. And then if we're going to increase it by such and such, a call, then this would be the proposed increase. And then he would look in the budget to see, is there any flexible room to be able to just absorb that internally? He alluded to the fact that probably if we were to get an increase, another group would probably get a decrease, but, I don't know because I don't have those budgets in front of me. If there's anything beyond that of a more significant number, then the implication was we probably would have to go to legislation and let legislation dictate what the increases would be. Because, he said, if legislation tells me I have to pay this out, then that's what I have to do. But if there isn't any legislative initiative, there's really no pressure or no incentive, let's say, for them to have to adjust or change it beyond where it's at right now.
So if we propose a dollar, then they can tell us what they pay out to the ambulance industry? But they can't tell us that now, which I find hard to believe. They write the check. I don't know how they wouldn't know how much they pay out to the ambulance industry.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. And Dana framed it correctly. It was unsure as to what the threshold was what they could shift in dollars internally. But generally speaking, it would take a legislative initiative. Apparently, they couched it that Wisconsin has a state rate plan, and this has to do with their partnership, if you will, with the federal government who regulates the Medicaid dollars. The Medicaid dollars, 60% of the Medicaid dollars, the $9.1 billion, comes from the federal government. One of the things that Kevin Morris said was he was concerned or more interested in, will throwing money on the rate be effective? Because one of the interesting phrases that he used is that they establish rates or base rates on are rates adequate to guarantee access. That's really what drives them, is that the rates, are they going to allow for adequate access to the Medicaid and enrollees. So I think we need to pursue that angle. And Dana is correct. As an example, when using Illinois and their rates, Kevin said, let's say the analysis is that for Wisconsin to get to Illinois rates, he said, is $28 million. What does $28 million effectively do for the EMS industry or providers in Wisconsin? So that was sort of one of the challenges, along with us bringing forward to them those cost reports that we had referred to. that was in Dana's introduction to this program. But Kevin Moore made the statement very clear that they do not reimburse cost. So if we think that we are going to achieve a rate that is the cost for an ambulance, that's not going to be achievable, at least my takeaway. What we are able to achieve is a rate that's, and I'll use his phrase again, adequate to guarantee access.
Without some kind of action. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Larry.
I'm sorry. I forgot. It was interesting, I might add, is that he used that precise number, $28
million. Yeah, they had been sent the graphs and charts ahead of time. So he probably pulled a calculator out and was able to say, well, with this small increase, if this is what it was, he did have a distinct number there saying, even if we did raise it up this much, you know, that, Larry's recollection is accurate for sure.
Essentially, the ball's in our court. What they want is what would be impactful, and they want to understand the references that we make with regards to the national cost, the reports on cost of ambulance service. You know, they brought forward, when I say they, it was mostly Kevin Moore speaking, but Karen McEwen was participated as well. You know, one out of five residents in Wisconsin are in Medicaid. Wisconsin Medicaid program has 13,000 providers. As an example, they went on to say that the family care program is very large in comparison, obviously, to the small EMS portion of the Medicaid program. We got it. We understand that we're just not the only provider. We understand that this is quite a big program, and it even referenced that in the time that we were in the meeting, I forget, Dana, he said that they spent like $50 million in the time that we were in the meeting.
In the 1 hour we were talking, $50 million had been spent across the state, yes. And I respectfully said, and most of that was not to ambulance services. In fact, probably less than $1,000 was actually given out to ambulance services, just when you keep that 1% in perspective.
But to conclude, at least from my perspective, is that the ball's in our court. We have access. They want follow-up. We want to give them a in-depth understanding why we think this is important. Will it be impactful, and where do we want to be, is really the three prongs.
Very good, Dana and Larry.
Then
thank you.
And from there is if we don't get, you know, a positive reaction from whatever the proposal is, you know, then we need to look. I always like to use this as my last resort, not the first resort, is it would then potentially look like it would take legislative action. Because whatever legislation decides, you know, the Medicaid department and DHS would be obligated to follow.
Very good, Dana and Larry. Thank you for highlighting the conversation. Very, very well done. If you have a question listening via the phone and would like to be brought into the conversation, press number 1 on your keypad. We'd be happy to take your question or bring you into the conversation. If you'd like to email a question, it's emslive@paw.us. Without action, regardless legislative or through the Department of Health, you know, growing budgets gaps caused by low Medicaid payments will result in a greater cost shift to local property taxes, or hopefully not result in a reduction of services. That's what we're trying to avoid. We'll continue our conversation regarding Medicaid, and then we'll also chat with Jerry Biggert from the State EMS Advisory Board on some highlights of what they're working on currently. You're listening to EMS Live. Our program continues after this brief message. This webcast is sponsored by the American Ambulance Association, who represents ambulance services with members providing emergency and non-emergency medical transportation services to more than 75% of the U.S. population. The AAA serves as a voice and clearinghouse for ambulance services across the nation and is a leading Washington, D.C. lobbying association for the ambulance industry. The AAA views pre-hospital care as an essential part of the total public health care system. Get to know the AAA at www.the-aaa.org. That again is www.the-aaa.org. Godfrey & Kahn, a Wisconsin-based law firm, combines specific experience in numerous practice areas to provide a wide range of legal and business counseling services. The law firm is known for its core business practice and litigation, as well as providing strategic legal advice to the healthcare industry and employers. Their clients range from individuals and small businesses to government entities and large private and public national and international companies. Have a legal question? Contact attorney Thomas Shorter at Godfrey & Kahn, 877-455-2900, or find them on the web at www.gklaw.com.
Don't miss a beat of Wisconsin EMS action. Listen to EMS Live or download any previous show on demand in the archive. And now back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. If you have a question and you'd like to be brought into the program, press number one on your keypad. Dana and Larry and Jerry, I wanted to just bring up one additional item. I sent this to our PAW Board of Directors the other day, and I found it through a news search, but it was with the state of Oregon. And I don't know if I trust that you've seen it, and I just wanted to spotlight it in our conversation because it may add some merit to our conversation. And the question by Wisconsin DHS officials is come back to us with some solutions. So what they've done in California and is now being proposed through legislative action in the state of Oregon is actually drawing on federal funds to compensate local governments, local ambulance services, for example, on the cost differences for the unfunded part of Medicaid. In other words, in the state of Oregon, and this is crazy, but in Oregon, they bill Medicaid patients $420 for an ambulance ride. I think, Dana, you alluded Wisconsin is $94, so significant difference already. But the true cost to deliver that ride in Oregon is $1,300. $1,300. So the difference is offset by the federal government through the entitlement program. So it might be something to look at as you look to develop solutions and what other states are trying to offer. And I know that article was sent out or it's available on the internet. But that is titled, New Source of Federal Funding Could Bolster Ambulance Services. That's the title of the article. Just wanted to make comment about that because I know you're looking for options.
Yeah, I would receive that. I was able to read through most of it, you know, a couple of times, just absorbing that. And that might be the perfect starting point for us to present this plan. Again, we're going to be working with the subcommittee for the Wisconsin EMS Advisory Group, and you know, where Jerry's the chairperson. So we're going to be bringing a proposal of some sort of a plan, and this might be a perfect starting point to start that and get everyone's ideas on some proactive approach to give back to the state.
Other states are challenged with this. There's no doubt about it. The one discerning difference, I think, is Wisconsin's at a deficit much deeper than other states are. And if you look at states in the area, for example, Illinois, I know your chart included Illinois, Missouri, I think Michigan was in there, other states. There is a greater deficit in what Wisconsin is allowing to be charged than what is being done in other states. But hopefully over time that can be made up, and you'll get to the right audience and you can get some decisions made. We thank you very much for your conversation on this very much. Is there anything in closing regarding Medicaid that we haven't touched on that should be before we wrap up that part of the conversation?
I'm going to go off of what Jerry had proposed was, We need to get this out to the general public. So whether it's our friends and family, whether it's legislators that can make a difference, EMS has for far too long been the quiet provider out there. And I know our roots go back to, you know, community pride and volunteerism, and we just want to be there to help. But we're at a point in crossroads more than ever before where the funding is not there, expenses are going up astronomically, and we're at points where ambulance services can't afford to run or function anymore. So we need to stand up, educate those around us, the legislators, to say, this is a needed, valuable service. This is an expectation that people have to get from here to there. They need this transportation, but we can no longer do it for free. We need to at least get paid for the cost. And quite frankly, I need to change tires every once in a while on the ambulances as well. So we need to put a little bit aside in savings. So we just need to educate what real costs are and get support from the community and the state legislators to get these initiatives through.
Very good, Dana. Thank you very much. Dana Seckler, Larry Canoe, thank you very much for your representation with officials at Department of Health last week and for the conversations that you're pursuing. Jerry, I wanted to bring you back into the conversation. I know there were a few highlights that you wanted to update everybody on as far as the EMS Advisor Board, some activities that are recently taking place. What are some of the priorities that you have right now on the radar?
All right. Thanks, Joe. Yeah, we're working on recruitment and retention issues. I'm sure that most people are aware of the law change that allowed for some more creative staffing options for ambulance services, especially in communities under 10,000 and under 20,000. And what we're trying to do is, and you know, that moved at record speed, and you know, just like other laws that have moved at record speed that impact EMS, but you know, the EMS advisory or EMS board was never approached. And one of our goals is to make sure that the legislators, especially the health committee, is aware that the governor has appointed a board of diverse EMS professionals to help them, you know, if they would like, make decisions that, and you know, some of the issues related to that. So we're trying to reach out to them. It doesn't appear that there's going to be a lot of time this year. I believe that all of the legislative sessions are ending or have already ended, and they aren't coming back for the year. So we won't have a ton of opportunity this year to reach out to the different committees, but that's a huge goal of ours. And, you know, between all the different legislation that passed last year, especially the creative staffing plan, you know, we feel that we need to reach out and come up with better solutions for recruitment and retention issues in rural areas. And I know it's not just a rural area thing, but that's what the legislation was largely crafted for. You know, we're kind of looking at what options exist, and we need to, you know, consider the things that we all have in common, such as we all reside in a county. And perhaps we need to look at county-funded options to assist in the ability to get ambulances out the door. So we're looking at a current law. It's 66.0602, and then it's 3E6, so it's buried in that statute. But it allows for the levy limits to not be capped with respect to county-run EMS services. You know, perhaps that's an option, that we can begin to supplement and increase care levels and even look at some of the prevention issues through mobile integrated healthcare and figure out a way to handle all of these issues through the county. I'm sure the counties are going to love that idea, but at the end of the day, we're kicking the can down the road right now. If we're at a point where we are now decreasing what kind of staffing should be on an ambulance and has always been on an ambulance since there's been ambulances in Wisconsin, we know that that's just going to satisfy the issues for a short period of time until that those two people aren't available, and then what? So, you know, we need to get something done now before the next request is that, you know, only one EMT and no second EMS provider be on an ambulance. So we're very sensitive to that. And, you know, we're also sensitive to the fact that there's services that have a ton of pride, and that's great, but they're not looking at closest unit responses. They're not looking at their neighbors because their neighbors may beat them to that call. And, you know, there's just some things that are really problematic for EMS responses in this state where we could get rigs there faster if we had better relationships and we utilize our neighbors or, you know, other providers that have the staffing available versus, you know, picking people selectively to be mutual aid, or waiting an exorbitant amount of time before we request mutual aid. And, you know, those are things that we're really concerned about, because these time-critical interventions that need to exist for people in Wisconsin to live through their medical emergencies or traumatic emergencies are too important to not have ambulances roll out of a station in a reasonable amount of time. So we need to fix things. We need to remove barriers. But decreasing the level of service we provide should be the absolute last option, not one of the first. So that's one of the big things that we're looking at. A couple of the other things that we're pushing hard for are pre-arrival instructions through the PSAPs. Nothing extreme, but trying to get compression-only CPR, airway obstruction, and bleeding control pre-arrival instructions delivered by PSAPs throughout the state. I think people would be shocked at how few places do that. And, you know, with our response times and knowing that these, you know, the viability of our patients depend greatly on how quickly these time-sensitive interventions take place, we know that there's PSAPs in this state that are doing this for free, you know, other than, you know, some training for their dispatchers, but just developing protocols through the medical direction of the EMS services that they reside in and getting these critical instructions out to people. So we're pushing hard on, you know, to get that moving through the state. And again, we know that it's an uphill battle. It always is. But it's getting to the point now where enough places are doing it. They're seeing good outcomes. And we need to continue to try to get PSAPs to provide this service. It's not as hard as they may think it is. And it's our job to show them that. We're pushing the Just Culture concept. The NAEMT has a Just Culture document out. And, you know, that, you know, this isn't to protect cowboys, if you will, but it is, and cowgirls, it is to protect good providers that make mistakes. And we've seen some significant actions taken against EMTs and paramedics in this state when mistakes happen, and they're education issues. And oftentimes through the investigation, it's found that the only time that they do see their medical director is when they drop patients off at the ER, or we have providers that don't receive regular training outside of their refresher or CQI, QA, et cetera, and they're losing or they're being threatened with losing their ability to practice through that service when, in fact, there's a systemic problem. And so we're trying to push through the medical directors and the service directors and the training officers, the Just Culture concept of working with good employees to make them successful and good providers versus taking negative action to the point where they're scared to do something because they're on some sort of last chance agreement or something because they made an honest mistake. So that's our goal, is to just develop better ways to make our EMS successful versus necessarily running right to discipline. Other things we're looking at is pandemic surge events. This thing has been kicked around before I was on the board, but it is going to get to the point where we won't have ambulances to send if the if a bad enough pandemic hits. And I think we've had a lot of soft abilities to practice how this is going to work, whether it was through H1N1 or the, you know, discussions about Ebola. But eventually we have to be prepared for something like that to hit Wisconsin, where it's going to affect the people that live in this state. It's going to affect the EMS workers who won't be able to come to work and staff ambulances. And we aren't going to be able to respond to everybody that calls 911 with specific symptoms. So how are we going to handle that? And trying to have a plan. Back in the day, Dr. Perillo and Chief Murawski from the Milwaukee area worked on this, and it's time to get this up and running again so that we have a plan for our services and our PSAPs when and if a pandemic should hit our area. And the last thing, I mean, I got a list of 100 things I could tell you, but the last thing we're working on is with PAC, Dr. Martins as the state medical director and Dr. Andrews in the Physicians Advisory Committee. We're working on medication assist protocols that go beyond the basic level. We have basic EMT basics that can, you know, assist with nitro, et cetera. That needs to be opened up for paramedics and higher level providers as well. We're seeing more and more people sent home with, you know, diseases and sicknesses that they need specific medications that aren't within the paramedic scope. An example would be like Solu-Cortef for Addison's disease. You know, when they need that, they need that, and they need it IV or even IO if they're in a crisis. And that's the one medication that they absolutely need or that works best for a lot of them. We should be able to do that if we're going to potentially, you know, watch their condition worsen, become severely hypotensive, potentially die, and they have a medication sitting right there that we could give them. So we need to make sure that as medicine advances and more treatments are available, there's a way for us to get those treatments into our patients because we're going to be who they call, and they're going to expect this, and we need to be able to do it. So those are some of the bigger things that we're working on at the board, but there's so much more, and we all appreciate the support that we get from the EMS community to have us there working on these things.
Very good, Jerry. Thank you for running down the list and offering some priorities that the board is working on. I know the board is very active and a very, very significant part of the activities that take place. Thank you for your leadership. I wanted to point out, maybe this is on your list, one thing that I've noticed in just following what's happening in other states, Minnesota, I know, is introducing legislation here very soon to protect its emergency responders, specifically ambulance workers, as far as if a bystander or somebody else at a scene threatens or hurts an emergency provider while providing patient care, will be treated in the court system as a felony, not a misdemeanor. And I'm not exactly sure how Wisconsin handles this, but I bring this up and just bring it to your attention that that might be something to just put on the list to look at, because I know Minnesota is pursuing it legislatively, and I've read recently about another state on the East Coast that is looking to do the same thing. That, again, is treating an EMS worker who is providing patient care to the person that violates that is treated as a felony. And I know Paratek, a few months back, actually had an ambulance shot at, and there was a bullet lodged just a few feet away from the driver's compartment. So the threat is there. It's always there. It's a high-risk business in some situations. But I just bring that to your attention.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Joe. One of the things that we have been looking at, I wouldn't say so much necessarily the board, because we really have, for whatever reason, one heck of a time impacting legislation or even being considered when legislation is moving through the system. But I do know that different advocacy groups that you know, we all know about are looking to take the same protections that police officers and firefighters have and apply them to EMS workers. I don't know why it wasn't crafted that way initially, and I think sometimes it all runs together and they forget that there are places in this state, a lot of places in this state, where EMS is separate from the fire department. But it is huge that we move in the direction of giving the same safety measures and protections to EMS workers as we do fire and police. So that is on a lot of dockets. And it's just a matter, again, of getting the attention at the Capitol to make these things happen.
Very good, Jerry. Thank you for offering these comments and highlights. I want to toss it back to Patrick and Dan. Is there anything in closing as we wrap up the program? I know we ran a little longer than anticipated, but this was a very, very good conversation, starting with Medicaid and then Jerry and his great highlights.
This is Dan. I think it was a good show and talked about a lot of good stuff, and appreciate Jerry's input. Things are really being worked on in a lot of different areas.
This is Patrick. Nothing to add for me, but I thank our guests for sharing their time with us and a lot of great information.
Very good. Jerry, did you have anything in closing?
I didn't, other than just thank you for the opportunity to talk to your listeners and let them know that it probably doesn't seem like there's a lot happening from the ambulance, but there are a lot of people that care very deeply about this craft and them, and that we're going to continue to work, try to make this whole system better for everybody that's in it, and that they should reach out to us if they have ideas or questions and never feel like their opinions don't matter.
Very good, Jerry. Thank you for those comments. I want to remind our listening audience that our next live show is Tuesday, March 8th, starting at 9 a.m. This broadcast was recorded, so if you'd like to forward it to a partner in EMS, you're more than welcome to. The broadcast will be ready for download about 10 minutes after we conclude. EMS Live is broadcast live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month, so don't miss a beat of Wisconsin EMS action. We invite your involvement and participation and listenership. We'd like to thank you very much for listening to today's broadcast. This is Joe Cavelli on behalf of Chris Anderson, Patrick Ryan, and Dan Williams. Thank you for your listenership today. Have a good week.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.